Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I'm Natalie Rios, and today we'll be talking with Steve Peters and Bob Beard, creators of the project Frankenstein 200, an ARG that teaches science through storytelling in the universe of Frankenstein. So Steve and Bob, thank you for being here and welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name's Bob Beard. I'm a project manager at Arizona State University's Center for Science and the Imagination. Part of our project from the National Science Foundation, we created Frankenstein 200, which is an ARG to teach science using Frankenstein as a lens to examine these emerging technologies like synthetic biology and artificial intelligence and robotics.
Excellent.
My name's Steve Peters, and I'm the Chief Creative Officer at No Minds Media out here in Los Angeles. And I basically was the experienced designer for the project, and I basically just did what Bob told me to do.
That's good. So great. Thank you, guys. To start, can you explain to the audience what the project is? I know we already said it's an ARG, but can you say how kids play it and what's their journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So the project is sort of a transmedia experience, which invites players to participate in this digital narrative, but also to do hands-on science experiments at 51 different science museums and science centers around the United States, and also a set of DIY homemaking activities as well that all sort of interrogate these big questions around Frankenstein and, you know, being, you know, what is life? What does it mean to be creative? What are our responsibilities to the things that we create, and what makes us human? So these are our big questions that we're interrogating through these through these different interactions. And as I said, the digital narrative is the part that we worked on with Steve and the No Mimes team. And this invites audiences to participate in science activities and thought experiments in the Laboratory for Innovation and Fantastical Exploration, which the acronym together, it's LIFE. And this is a high technology company founded by a descendant of the original Victor Frankenstein. And as we find out that Victor Frankenstein was a real person, and Mary Shelley's book was sort of a libelous hit job on this misunderstood scientist from 1818. And so players are invited to come into this narrative universe and work with Dr. Frankenstein and examine some of the emerging technologies that her lab is working on. And yeah, it's still a Frankenstein story. And so all of the things that go along with a Frankenstein story, you get to experience, but just in an interesting sort of remixed way.
Really good. And what is the role of the user, and what can you say, how do they encounter this experience, the digital experience, and how they advance in the story? I mean, what's like the mechanics of this digitally interactive experience?
Steve, do you want to take that one? I feel like
sure.
I've been yeah.
Well, there's the cool thing I love about this is there are, as Bob mentioned, 51 partner museums, and at those museums, as after the installations that they have there, there's kind of little rabbit holes that people can register to take part in the ongoing experience there. So we kind of capture kids at the museum, but people really anywhere, anybody can join. And all it takes is registering on the site, and being an ARG for kids creates some unique challenges in that, you know, keeping things in a walled garden. And so we kind of wanted to create this experience that had all the cool and fun parts of an alternate reality game without any of the Wild West of the web dangers, you know, of an alternate reality game. So people sign up, they provide, you know, their email address, their phone number, and just this experience starts that you can start anytime. It's a single player experience as opposed to a collaborative alternate reality game, which is kind of normal. And it takes place over about 30 days worth of time. And every few days you get a message from the lab, and you're recruited to be a lab assistant at the Life Academy, and you get access to this super secret cool club of being, you know, a lab assistant for Dr. Tori Frankenstein. And so you get to take part in a fun narrative. The story is delivered via video and chat messages and social media, quote unquote, posts and photos, and the story unfolds that way. But at the same time, we encourage a lot of exploration. There's an actual chat bot that you can play with, kind of an AI that of course, as we're retelling the story of Frankenstein, it seems like there has to be an AI in there somewhere. And so along the way, you get to play with that. You just get to see what happens. And again, like Bob was saying, it asks the same kind of tough questions as far as what is life, and get for kids to be able to think about these things. And I just love it because it gets kids excited for science. At least that's our hope. Through the telling of this story in kind of a fun, interactive way.
Yeah, and it's a little bit philosophical as well, even though it's for kids, right? What is life? What's the meaning?
Yeah, very much, because we've got, you know, technology is part of our lives, and these are questions at some point we need to ask. You know, what is life, and what constitutes, you know, why is Siri, what makes Siri different than my mom? You know, obviously that's easy to tell now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, may not be so cut and dry.
Yeah. And where did the idea come from? I mean, you explain it, what it is about, but why this idea and why this format and gamification and interactive narratives?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Steve was getting at, I think that, you know, Frankenstein isn't really a science fiction story anymore. And so, you know, as an educational tool, we're really interested in using that as a way to examine the things that our young learners are going to inherit, you know, sort of the world that they're going to inherit. I mean, we have high school students participating in synthetic biology competitions through iGEM, and, you know, most major metropolitan libraries have robotics workshops. And we all have the ability to create and distribute ideas around the globe in an instant. And so, you know, I think it's important, certainly for our young people to think about these things, you know, before they go off and start making these things themselves out into the world. But I also think, you know, and the reason why we chose this format is because, you know, our young people today have been raised in, you know, immersive story environments. I mean, you know, from Harry Potter to, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so, you know, I think it's important for us to create educational materials that reflect those literacies and those skills. And so that's, you know, that's sort of the reason that we chose to bring, you know, our Frankenstein project to life in this way. Yeah. Lots of puns. Lots of Frankenstein puns today.
Oh, we've been full of them the last 9 months.
That's great. Can you tell us about the process of writing the story for a multi-platform experience? That it's mixing like learning goals, but with a fun part and a gamified part.
Well, we have the benefit of having, you know, veteran writers Maureen McHugh and Jay Bushman on the project, and so once we came up with kind of the concept, they went off and did their magic and came back with a fun kind of modern retelling of the story, again keeping in mind the touch points that Bob and his team wanted us to hit. And from then, as with these projects, typically once we have the story kind of laid out, then we'll work kind of in a symbiotic relationship with the design team to come up with kind of the game mechanics, the story mechanics, and figuring out how each piece is going to be delivered in an effective and fun way. And I sit back and just kind of make sure it's fun at every turn, because especially with kids, every step you're asking people to take steps, you're asking people to interact, and you know, the best tool that you have in your arsenal to make sure they continue to do that, besides giving them achievements, which we do, is to have a fun story and to have it be fun to do. So at almost every step of the way, my job is always to stop everybody and say, wait, is this fun? Should we do this? Is this fun? I don't know if it's fun enough. Let's make it more fun. That was my battle cry. And I'm sure people got kind of tired of hearing me ask that question.
So you used the gamification to reward with the achievements and all that, to tell the story and also to teach. So can you talk a little bit about the characters and their interactive function in the digital narrative?
Bob, you want to take that, or you want me to...
Let's chat about that. So, with Frankenstein, one of the things that was important to us is to have, a little, it needed to be familiar, it's still a Frankenstein story. And so, in some of our early plotting, we asked, well, how do we remix this story, and how do we do a 21st century Frankenstein story, but still, still get all those beats and still make it, something that's not didactic, like mm-hmm. Steve said, it needs to be fun, and it also needs to be recognizable. And so, one of the things that we really liked about this is that acknowledging, that, Frankenstein is a story, because there's 200 years of history and legacy sort of freighted onto that name and that idea. And so you can't do a suspension of disbelief and say, Frankenstein is not a thing, like, we're going to transport you into a world where you've never heard about Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So, all of those expectations from, the novel and the movie and the breakfast cereal and the Halloween costumes, like, you find those in there. But then Tori Frankenstein, this descendant of the original Dr. Frankenstein, she's sort of a looming presence throughout the story. And we really don't, we feel her, but we don't really see her until towards the end. So most of the story is told through these two window characters, through Maya, who's a research assistant in the lab, and she concentrates on genetics and biochemistry. And Xavier, who is another research assistant, and his area of expertise is machine learning and robotics and artificial intelligence. And so they're in awe of Tori, just like we are. And they're sort of providing that entryway for the players to say, this is somewhere where it's super cool, and you should be excited about science because we're excited about science. But they're also, recognizable characters. And we have great actors portraying those roles. Nikki Suhu she was previously in The Lovely Bones, and she's in the MTV reboot of Heather. She plays Maya. And Jeremy Howard, who has done just a ton of stuff, Galaxy Quest, and does a lot of motion capture stuff now, he plays the character of Xavier. And each one of them sort of has this really recognizable sort of, place they're coming from emotionally, where Maya is smart, but has a little bit of sort of uncertainty, and Xavier is he's brilliant as well, but he feels a little bit of imposter syndrome. And so these are things that people entering into sciences, especially young people in science, have to face, whether they belong or whether they're good enough. And our project is everyone can be a scientist, and everybody has the capacity to think like a scientist, just in the same way that everyone has the capacity to be an artist. Everyone is creative. Everyone can think about science and has something to contribute. And so we wanted that to be, foregrounded in our story too.
That's great. It's you are empowering them. Any kid that just come and plays this game or interacts with it, they feel empowered, I guess.
Absolutely.
That's the hope. Yeah.
Excellent. I know that in the game you can advance levels or complete levels by making use of the Athenaeum. Do you want to explain a little bit of the function of the Athenaeum and why you decided to use this simple mechanic that works really well and is very easy to understand and use?
Sure. The Athenaeum is just a fancy word for, a cool digital library. Mm-hmm. And so we basically had to, because we didn't want kids, it started off as a very practical mechanic in that we can't have kids use Google and go off into the wilds and who knows what they'll find. And as a parent myself, that kind of concern is very valid. So what we basically did is we created our own kind of digital archive that the Life Lab maintains, so it's a fictional library of all the wonders and cool stuff that it finds as part of its like in so many fictional tales. There are fictional libraries within them. Harry Potter and all these Game of Thrones, and they all have a kind of a repository of information, so that way we can not only pick and choose what we want to have in there, but we can present it in a way that's fun and applicable to the story. And we made that in a lot of ways. That's kind of a foundational mechanic for progressing through the game. As you see things, the Athenaeum also has, monitors all the activity that goes on in the lab. And if it kind of basically in real time, supposedly, kind of hypertextualizes pertinent keywords as it sees people talk about them. And so you'll be chatting with one of the characters and one of the words is highlighted in a way that makes you say, oh, I should check out the Athenaeum, is basically saying, hey, check out the Athenaeum. We've got some more information about this. So that was kind of our core exploration and game mechanic, that we could track, obviously, what people search for, what they find, and finding one thing, may lead to another. And they're just like basically little, it becomes a collection game in a way. It becomes kind of a very simple collection mechanic in that you're always on the lookout for these keywords, because those are kind of literally the keys to making it to the end of that chapter that you're in, the level that you're in. And it proved to be quite, once we got it built and running and filled with fun content, it proved to be a lot of fun to do, and it's fun to see what people search for as well. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of fun to kind of look through the records and see what they're trying to find.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah, I think it's a really good mechanic to achieve what you were trying to do with a project.
Yeah, because in a typical ARG, you're wanting to give clues to have people find things. It's basically internet archaeology, and we couldn't have, clues would lead to a new website or it would lead somewhere else, and we couldn't have that in this case. We had to keep it all kind of confined, and we're basically like, we're going to have to build our own Google, basically, and so the Athenaeum, in my opinion, itself has kind of a character of its own. It kind of has a feel just by the way it responds and stuff like that. So it's kind of a sixth character. There are two other minor characters, Igor, of course, and I think Sam is our museum character. But the Athenaeum to me is a sixth character, because he or she or it has its kind of own quirky, kind of fun personality as well.
Yeah. Well, and I also like the Athenaeum too as as a mechanic, because with our project, we're all hoping to impact our learners, and transmedia being sort of a cornerstone of 21st century skills, right? Like mm-hmm. Learners have to be able to access information efficiently and effectively and manage information from a wide variety of sources. And so, they're doing that. Even in this walled garden, they're getting cues you know, in the videos and through the chat, you know, sort of the Slack channel, the life Slack channel, and, you know, finding these different points of connection, and then going into the Athenaeum and, you know, entering in those keywords and then getting an answer. And so it's happening in real time.
Yeah. We're kind of teaching digital literacy in a way. Mm. I mean,
yeah. And how to make sense of it all. In a way.
Yeah, which I think is a huge, I mean, working with local schools here in LA, I know a friend of mine is kind of in charge of trying to teach digital literacy. It's a huge issue here, and people know that it's a huge issue and are trying to learn to address it. And I'm like, now I can say, hey, have them do this thing. Have them do our thing. We'll teach them a little.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if the kids play this game being supervised or is it on their own? Like in a, for example, in a classroom, or is it on their own time and space?
Yeah, it's on their own. This is you know, something that is a you know, is a one player experience. It's built for one player. But you know, we were very I remember some of our early conversations, you know, thinking about who would be playing this and how they would be engaging with it. And I think it's also an extension of you know, the kids encountering it in a science museum. In the best case of a visitor to a science museum, they're with, you know, a parent or a guardian or a mentor or, you know, some older adult that can help them contextualize this. And this experience, the Frankenstein 200 digital experience, is built for an audience, you know, 10 to 14, but it can also skew a little bit younger because, you know, people go to science museums and, you know, sort of people that are curious are welcome to play and enjoy. But we were, you know, we really built this as an opportunity for, you know, parents to sit with their children, or guardians to sit with their children, or loved ones to sit, you know, older brothers, older sisters, and go through this experience together and have conversations about these things. Because again, you know, the entire experience is built to improve one's notions of self-efficacy around the science and society topics. So, you know, I know my mom constantly asks me, she's like, you know, what's up with like self-driving cars? It's like, well, this is, you know, this is something that, in a very fun way, contextualizes those very, very current and contemporary, arguments and concerns about these new technologies.
Yes, exactly. I was going to ask you if there's any opportunity for reflection after playing the game, or to see how they did or why, or to reflect on any of the subjects. Or is that through the game with the characters?
So there are some built-in places to reflect. Where we are, you know, capturing their answers and that will eventually be evaluated, crunched by our research team. But then there are, you know, there are points at the end of the game too, where, you know, we send them at the end of the game and say, you know, basically, okay, this was, you know, and they've known since the beginning, there is an informed consent at the beginning that this is a research project from the National Science Foundation and Arizona State University. But at the end of the game, you know, we ask them to reflect on their experience and on the ending, and then we'll also be contacting some folks if they assent to it for some interviews, so we can learn a little bit more about the choices that they made and the experience that they had.
In addition, too, I mean, one of the first things they do is they take one of these, you know, quote unquote personality tests, and so we're setting them up to kind of reflect and think about themselves and who they are and what type of you know, things that they enjoy, whether it's science or stuff like that, and then even we give them a second chance later on in the experience to answer some of the same questions, and so there are definitely, you know, some good kind of self introspective times that we're encouraging there between that and saying and asking them what they think of, you know, certain kind of dilemmas that, you know, well, what do you think of this, and seeing what they say, as Bob mentioned. But I think the personality test, you know, we use it as from a game mechanic, we use it kind of like the sorting hat. It basically, you know, the content will personalize to a certain extent based on what personality they got when they took that initial test. You know, in a minor way. I mean, the story arc remains the same, but some of the content is then kind of personalized even further, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's great. I think, yeah, you're calling to reflection when they compare what they felt like when they answered the questionnaire before joining this experience. So, yeah, in a fun way, you're making them reflect. That's good. What were your biggest challenges, would you say?
Oh, man. you know, it was a pleasure for me, just, you know, because I'm a player myself in, you know, sort of this ARG and transmedia landscape. And so I think I mean, all of it was fantastic for me. As far as a challenge, you know, I think I was conditioned just because as a player, I've been conditioned to, you know, go all over the internet, and to put this on rails was something, you know, sort of I had to figure out how to do this game in a constrained way. And so that was probably my biggest challenge from sort of an early design standpoint.
I was going to say that my biggest challenge, was knowing when to stop, because I was having so much fun. And, you know, and the Conductor platform, you know, shameless plug for you guys here, but, you know, it's really robust. And every time I laughed, because it's like, after every meeting with you guys, after I was like going, oh, there's going to be some red flags here that, you know, ooh, I don't know if this will work. And there was always a great solution, you know, kind of built out of the box. And of course we, as I do, you know, tried to push that envelope and, you know, break things, just to kind of get as much out of things as possible. But it is that it's like, okay, well, we could do this and we could do this. And it's like, all right. Yeah. I had to remind myself, just because you can, doesn't mean you should. And so that was kind of my biggest challenge, you know, keeping things within scope for my own benefit, because of all the great possibilities. It's like, oh, so many things that I had on my drawing board that, you know, there wasn't enough, you know, time and resources to actually implement. But a lot of the stuff at the same time, I was amazed at how we pulled it off. We have a real chatbot. We have an AI. We have, you know, all this other kind of fun stuff that at the beginning was like, we'll explore this, see if we can pull this off. And sure enough, all the major stuff we wanted to, we ended up doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's something that happens in every project, interactive project, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like, you have so many possibilities, and then you have to nail it down, really decide what really works and what you should do for your, you know, end user or player. It's sometimes you have to sacrifice ideas, and it's tricky, but it's a good experience.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess from a practical sense, you know, my biggest challenge was, you know, the time zone difference between us and you guys. I'd have a question at 4 p.m. Hey, I'm going to shut off a question. It's like, oh, they're sleeping. It's like 2 a.m. and I'll have to wait till I get up tomorrow morning or stay up late. So, but hey, you know, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it. That's, you know, when you do these worldwide projects, that's one of the consequences, and it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. And when you have like international team members,
almost every project I've done has had a worldwide team, and it's always like, I am really good at having a long list of time zone calculators in front of me at any moment.
Yeah, it's part of the job now.
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the user testing process?
I'll leave that one up to you, man.
We did some testing in schools before the launch. So we did a couple rounds with an elementary school classroom, and then also in a middle school classroom. You know, with the first run through, with the first sort of test, it revealed sort of, you know, just some things that I think you know, are part of any design process. It's like, oh, well, you know, there's some wording here that can be misconstrued. And so, you know, we of course want to make sure that we're getting the science right in all of this. And so our users in those first initial tests, you know, they of course had some questions about you know, what the game was telling them, and, you know, not to perpetuate, you know, fake science news, we went in and quickly fixed those too. And you know, at this point I should definitely definitely mention our partners, you know, because in addition to 51 different science centers around the nation, you know, we also have great advisors, you know, from around the nation, including, you know, the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and the Bakken Museum in Philadelphia, the Rosenbach in, the Bakken Museum in Minneapolis and the Rosenbach in Philadelphia, New York Public Library, and our science advisor. So we had a myriad of advisors that were helping us get all of this right. And then, you know, after a couple rounds, you know, it was really dialed in. And it was just a matter of, you know, making sure everything fired when it was supposed to fire. And you know, Steven, you guys, it's rocking. So we're really excited.
It was actually a nice luxury for me, because usually in projects that we do, there's no testing period. It's live testing. It's like, all right, we're ready. Let's put it out there. And because it's done in real time, right? So, you know, if it's live for, you know, a collaborative audience, there's no dress rehearsal. I mean, there's scrubbing sites and stuff, but there's no user testing. So this was great to be able to actually get updates from Bob as he's watching kids actually playing the game. And it was really valuable stuff.
Definitely. That's great. So to close, what would you say is the biggest takeaway from the project for you guys?
This is sort of a dream to you know, to put this together, you know, to be able to work with Steve and the conductor team in creating this educational project that is delivered in this way. I think it's, I think it's really novel. I know that there's, you know, transmedia storytelling in education is sort of a burgeoning movement. And so we're excited to, contribute to that. And what I really like about it is that it is, you know, it's sort of, you know, distributed, right? Like you can be hands-on, and you can have, you can actually manipulate materials, and that is part of the story that we've created in this narrative. And then you can, you know, go out of the story and make things at home, and you can tinker, and you're still getting part of the story. So I mean, I am getting goosebumps right now. I mean, it's just super cool.
Wrong brand.
So I'm just really excited about the possibility of having more projects like this. You know, whether I'm involved in them or not, I'll certainly be playing them and championing them.
For me, I jokingly talk, you know, I talked about just because you can doesn't mean you should, which actually is a theme of the story itself. I mean, is, you know, something that we communicate to the kids. That's not really a takeaway for me as much as the fact that, okay, no, you can do something effective for kids in kind of a confined space, because, you know, we're like, well, we can do all these things that we know are kind of, you know, proven mechanics, best practices and stuff, but, you know, are the kids going to like it? Hmm. Are the kids going to stay interested? We've got this, you know, it takes place over 30 days worth of time. Are we going to be able to hold their interest that long? And from all the feedback we've seen right now, is the answer is yes. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be, and you don't need a staple of a lot of the things that I've done. You know, you don't need spies and hackers and that kind of stuff to do this kind of work in this space. It can be fun. I mean, I want to say this is the most fun and, dare I say, comedic project that we've done. And it's, I mean, I just love looking at the site. It's just delightful how we kind of, our graphic guys, you know, just did a brilliant job in finding this great balance between, I mean, because we had a balance to achieve, you know, horror and kids, you know, we don't, there's a line there. And it can be done. And so my big takeaway is, yeah, this can be done. We can entertain kids at the same time, make it fun to learn. And you hear that all the time. And 9 times out of 10, when I, as a dad, look at something that's supposed to be like, this is edutainment, it's like, yeah, this is not fun at all. This it feels very, you know, there's great, great stuff out there. But a lot of times when it comes to interactive stuff, and admittedly, your hands are tied in a lot of ways. But I think we stumbled on something, something here that is really effective. And I, like Bob, I want to see more people doing this sort of stuff. And, you guys know where to get a hold of us if you do. Bob would be a great person to come on and he's got a lot of learnings. He could let you know.
Yeah.
Contact. Yes, I agree. The project is so much fun. I mean, just you look at it and you want to play it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, well done, guys.
Thanks.
Well, Bob and Steve, thank you so much for making the time to do this interview. And it was really great learning about the process of creating this amazing ARG. And that teaches science and also calls for reflection. And it's fun and educational. So if you can share with us how people can find you online.
So you can find out all about the project and jump straight into the world of Tori Frankenstein's lab at frankenstein200.org.
Excellent. Steve, do you want to share anything?
No, that's it. That's it. Jump in, go to frankenstein200.org and sign up and play today.
Awesome. Great. Thank you very much again, guys.
Thanks, Natalie.